Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Matinair on Air. My name is Greg Bach. I'm sitting in for Jane Matinair, who is on vacation right now, but will return on Monday, this coming Monday. Calvin, are you excited to see Jane again?
I am very excited.
I am too. I think it's going to be a really fun show. Lots of energy. Hopefully nothing crazy or terrible happens between now and Monday. But, you know, that's usually par for the course. We get off the air and like 2 minutes later, something crazy goes on. But we're excited to see Jane come back to the big chair. I will happily give it back to her because she is the one who makes the show amazing. But right now, we are just happy to have you along with the ride for Thursday. If you want to get in touch with us, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC is the way to get in touch with us. You can call or text that number. It's all the same. You can also do it by downloading the Civic Media app. Simply install it from your favorite application store of choice. You can call and text and listen anywhere you want through that app. Just so you all know as well, you can listen to us. And I didn't know this was a thing, Calvin, until recently. You can listen to us on your smart speaker. You said you have one at home, but you don't use it, correct?
Correct.
But if you have one like a Google Nest or an Alexa or whatever else they have out there, you can simply just say to your smart speaker and be polite because they're the robots. They will be our overlords soon. Just say, play WAUK or play WGBH, and then you can listen to us through your smart speaker. Either way, whether you're taking it through the app, through the radio, or through your smart speaker, you can listen to us anytime, and we'd love to have you along. Now, Calvin brought this up to me as far as a topic we were discussing earlier this week, something called dirtbag leftists. And I was reading into this, Calvin, and I thought to myself, Am I a dirtbag leftist? Am I? I might be. Calvin, can you talk more about dirtbag leftists?
Well, I don't think you are.
Okay.
Dirtbag left is actually a term that I just found out about. Mm-hmm. In researching what I wanted to talk about, which is the online left and how it differs from the mainstream Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
Why they feel disillusioned, what their motivations might be, and how we could bring them into the fold.
Yeah.
So the impetus from this that I first started seeing this was it started following the terrorist attacks in Israel on October 7th.
Okay.
There's a strong portion of this online left group that has a very anti-American sentiment. And okay. So I guess, yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts about why anti-Americanism is so prevalent in radical leftism.
Well, first of all, like the way you describe it and the way I see it, so I'll start it with what I found on the most reliable source of information ever, the Wikipedia. I don't know if you've heard of it, Calvin, but it's quite new and revolutionary. But the quote-unquote dirtbag left, which is an actual term, is a style of left-wing politics that eschews civility to convey a left-wing populist and anti-capitalist message using vulgarity. And I think it's because they use the word vulgarity. That's why I said, oh, I've seen my Twitter. I get pretty mean sometimes. I never get mean towards people who don't deserve it. But after what you're saying is, I don't think I consider myself part of that group. And it seemed to have come from the rise of the Occupy Wall Street movement back in the earlier 2000s and made its way through the Bernie Sanders campaigns, both in 2016 and 2020. As we know, he did not get the nomination. They were called Bernie Bros. And I personally feel like sometimes they got a little aggressive for my taste, but I know people who are anti-capitalist. I know people who are left, and I wouldn't even consider them this, because if we're talking about an anti-American sentiment, I don't think that may be true, because I think that these individuals hold a torch for America, but it's their version, which is more equality, more equity, more opportunity. And that means tearing down, in their minds, some pretty huge structures that are very firmly in place. One of them being capitalism, which is something that, you know, people like to say, we need to get rid of capitalism. I don't, I'm not smart enough, Calvin, to know, one, how to get rid of it, and two, what would happen in light of that getting rid of capitalism, because we'd have to replace it with something. And if we're going back to bartering, that might be tough, because I don't think Amazon would go along with that. We have Andrew on the live stream saying, I guess my first question is, what defines Americanism other than being born in the USA? What makes someone American? That's a very good question. Calvin, you have a thought?
Yeah, well, I guess I'll just expand on the anti-Americanism a little bit. There's this idea on the online left, and I guess to maybe put a name to people who are familiar, even though many people in our audience probably won't be, this is kind of personified by personalities like Hassan Piker.
Okay.
Hassan Piker is a Twitch streamer. He's actually the nephew of Cenk Uygur, the founder of the Young Turks.
Oh, okay. I see. Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
He is kind of the driving force of like Gen Z leftism on the internet. And he has some very valid criticisms of the United States surrounding like Vietnam and the Iraq War.
Mm-hmm.
But this has led him to a position, and that he has therefore let his audience down now, that all American intervention in foreign policy is bad and inherently evil.
Okay.
And that kind of leads to that really was sharpened by the events that are transpiring in Gaza right now.
Which, I mean, when you talk about something like invading a country, I understand why individuals will say that all invasion, all war is bad. And I don't disagree with that point as far as believing it. You can believe whatever you want. But they also refer to them as the online left. Now, if they were the left, they might be doing something as far as like protesting, donating money, running for office, getting to the place where power is held and trying to either influence or take it. But if I'm not mistaken, and if I'm reading this incorrectly with what I've seen, is, you know, you saw people definitely do something during the Occupy Wall Street movement. Absolutely. But if people are relying their politics on a presence in the internet, then at some point you might lose credibility. And this goes for any politics too, by the way. This is not just the left. This is the right. This is the middle. This is the, you know, every time I see Jill Stein tweet, I'm just like, where have you been for the past 4 years? Now you're just here to lob, you know, your truth bombs at people, but it's not helping. So if you're saying this kind of stuff online, that's fine. But after a while, people might just say like, well, what are you really doing to help? What are you really doing? What are you really doing to tear down the systems that you deplore so much? That's the question I would have as well.
Yeah. And I guess that's a great segue into how I wanted to tie this together. Cause I don't necessarily agree with those positions they hold, mm-hmm. but I think they're defensible and I think you can have a logical, reasonable argument about it. But the problem that now I have is what this one book that I actually haven't read about the online left calls armchair activism.
Yeah. You sent me the, I think I'm going to download this because I'd like to, because that's what I'm afraid about for me being sometimes is like, I love a mean tweet. I love sending a mean tweet, but is that doing anything? But I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go on.
Yeah, no, it's okay. So yeah, it's just a lot of these people are pointing out issues. They're talking about end goals of some of them even go as far as communism. They talk about this being desired and how it needs to happen and a worker revolution of sorts, but they never explain how we get there.
Yeah.
They never explain the policies that it would take to get there. And they seem to abhor slow progress, which I think is antithetical to what the American government, how it's supposed to move.
And that's something that we can link back to what Dr. Lyerly was talking about too, is that, you know, some of these things that, you know, we're talking about major policy changes. We're talking about major shifts in American existence. That's not going to happen with, you know, going to work one day and just casting a vote. That's something that you have to chip away at over years, if not longer. I mean, it took us a long time to get to a version of healthcare that we have in this country. And it's still, you know, people still are unhappy with it, but we got somewhere and then we take it a step further. And for me, the question I would have for those individuals who consider themselves dirtbag leftists, and it's, I always feel like I'm being mean to them by saying it, but you know, if we're starting with a place like Occupy Wall Street, which was, you know, that was in the 2010s or the 2000s, I should say. Also, we're talking about the period of 15 to 20 years. As you get older, your views might change. You might think differently of this country or of people or of politics. I personally have become someone who over time has become more left, but I also understand the slow movement of change, which is frustrating, so frustrating, but you can't just from your Twitch stream or from your Twitter or from your phone or from whatever, just say, we need to do these things and propose no real solutions. Then as your armchair activist, and that's all you'll be seen as if you're not going to put the work in, which is, you know, knocking on doors, making phone calls, sending postcards, running for office, which I think, especially with this generation, people who in their 20s and 30s, I mean, knock on those doors, run for city council, run for county board, run for mayor. I mean, get into the local positions and affect that change directly for what you want to see. To me, that's the only way of really doing it. So that's, I just can't believe I'm about to say this, Calvin, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I guess my final thoughts on the matter are, I think there is a place for online activism and speaking out and voicing your opinion on the internet. I think where it becomes dangerous, especially if you espouse left-wing ideals and caring about things like reproductive rights and healthcare, there's a clear choice in November, and forgoing making that choice is a mistake.
I couldn't agree more, my friend. You only make changes if you make it. So, Calvin, thank you so much. We're going to take a small break. We're going to be right back with another edition of Let's Not Do This, with an update from Sweet Calby on aggressive text messaging. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close. You are amazing. Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matt and Air, who is currently on vacation, returning on Monday. So excited to see her again. We got Sweet Cal B on the boards, and we got you on the phones with the text lines, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. One number, two things you can do with that, call or text. You can also do that through the Civic Media Radio app, and you can also drop us a comment on the live stream, which is on Facebook, YouTube, or the site we will always call Twitter because it makes Elon upset. We were talking about before about the dirtbag leftist movement, armchair activist movement, Twitch streaming your politics, things like that. And we got a couple of texts beforehand. Weston Middleton, listening on WMDX, says, Occupy Wall Street pushed me into the center, almost to the right. MAGA Trumpism pushed me back left. Extremism and dirtbagism, quote unquote, on both sides is counterproductive. The right let their dirtbags take over the party, and look where they ended up. And of course, Andrew from Maine, with a very, very important observation, listening on WAUK, says, I agree with you, Greg. Calvin is pretty amazing. So welcome to 1120, which is time for Let's Not Do This Again, or Let's Not Do This, or whatever we're going to call it. Let's Not Do This, Calvin. I think that's what we should call it. Do you think so?
Yeah, because we definitely should not be doing this.
So if you were listening to the show on Monday, I believe it was, Calvin was talking to us about some very, very extreme text messages that came through to his phone. And you sent them to me over the weekend, and you were asking me whether or not I thought they were real or not. And I believe they were 100% real because there is no irony, satire, or humor whatsoever in them. Calvin, give them a brief overview of what you got.
Yeah, so these text messages appear to come from a super PAC. I get them from a different number every time, but I can tell they're the same group because of the language they use and the meme format that every text message includes an image. And these messages include things about Donald Trump and Kamala Harris and the Bible. They're very fundamentalist, yes. I guess you could say.
Yes.
And yeah, I personally think it seems like a losing strategy to be sending these text messages out. I think they're scaring people away. But yeah.
I would go as far to say as those things, they push the Christian nationalist agenda. I know that we find them funny because their pictures are hilarious and they're very dramatic language. Very dramatic language, but they're dramatic language that pushes a Christian nationalism theme, which is women are meant to be at home making babies, making dinner. Trump is God. He is sent to us by our God. He is a flawed man, but he is our flawed man. Like all these things that, you know, have no hint of satire, no hint of a joke with them. The Onion would write this in a way that would make you laugh. This is kind of scary rhetoric. And I don't think, Calvin, as I said to you on Monday with Angela Lang, that this is a losing battle because they could send this to 500,000 people. And I think there would be a percentage who would say, yeah, I love this. Where do I donate? And all they care about are the ones who agree. Either they're going to be people who say, stop. What I do is I block the number and I report it as spam. And, you know, I'm sure Google, you know, goes to their house and tells them, stop doing that. But I don't think they care about winning or losing because to them, no matter what, even the reaction itself is a win for them. But we have an update. Calvin, you said you've gotten more of them in this week?
Yeah. So the first two came over the Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
And I have since received two more. The first one came on Tuesday night. This one has I don't know if this will mean anything to people who aren't in the internet, but it's kind of like a deep fried image. Like it's very like overly saturated. Gotcha. And not that great looking of a maternity picture, a pregnant mother sitting with her three children. And it's superimposed upon the same exact American flag cross background that all the others were.
Definitely not a desecration of the flag, but go on.
And this message says, oh, well, the words on the meme are Trump for traditional wives. And then the text message reads, we believe in Jesus. Donald Trump will direct the government to block birth control and restore traditional Christian values. With Trump back in the White House, women can once again understand our role as submissive wives.
Oh, God.
Pregnancy is a holy calling. Kamala Harris will put an abortion clinic on every block. Remember in November. So that's even really weird.
Oh my gosh, grammar. That is. My wife has a really good sense of humor. If I read that to her as a joke, she would look at me like, I'm about to smack you upside the head right now. That's not even funny. It's not funny, but it's like, that is Christian nationalist talk right there. I mean, that is dramatic. Religious and end times type of thing, an abortion clinic on every block. My goodness, who could imagine that? No one could, because that's never going to happen. What was the other one, Calvin?
Yeah, so this one came through just last night, and this is Trump. The image features Trump on the same stock American flag cross background, holding a Bible. I'm pretty sure it's the upside down Bible picture. Because the little like placeholder thing is coming out of the bottom.
Yeah.
And the message is, I'm the one that got rid of Roe v. Wade. And then the text message says, President Trump and J.D. Vance know that women today will be elevated in God's kingdom by submitting to our husbands and embracing childbearing as our sacred duty. That's why Trump got rid of Roe v. Wade. Don't let childless Kamala Harris stop Trump from finishing God's plan for women.
Oh, man. See, we should have, oh, man, we should have more time to talk about this. We could actually probably talk about this with Jane next week. She will be, I can hear the laugh. Calvin, you can hear the laugh right now when you read this to her. But really quick, that says a lot, too, because right now, as we're seeing, Donald Trump is trying to back away from abortion. He's backing away from Project 2025. He's trying to do everything to not make it look like he is leading a Christian nationalist extreme agenda through that book and through his campaign. So who's right and who's wrong? Is he not going to do that? Is he not going to do an abortion ban? Is it going to be states' rights? Or are these text messages the real truth? Is he going to make it that every woman has to be a mother? Abortion clinic, and if Kamala Harris gets in office, abortion clinics on every single block. Calvin, what is going on right now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. That just seems like a really poor use of real estate to put an abortion clinic on every single block.
Oh, yeah. But also, just let's also not forget, Calvin is neither married nor has children. So it's also not his key demographic for this message. So thank you for the update, Calvin. Really appreciate that on this another edition of Let's Not Do This, Please. When we come back, we're going to have sports guru and JS writer J.R. Radcliffe here on the show. Don't go anywhere. Get in touch if you'd like. 855-752-4842. You're listening to Matt and Air on the Air on Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close. You're awesome. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matt and Air, who is currently on vacation, but will be returning on Monday. We cannot wait to see her. We can take your calls and take your texts. Do that same number, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. And also, just to let you know, tomorrow, it's a big day for sports, because you can hear that on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can listen to it on WRCE. You can also listen to WISS, WPFP. You can listen to the Brewers take on the Colorado Rockies. There's a 4:35 broadcast start with a 5:10 start, I believe. And then also, it's the beginning of the Green Bay Packers season in Brazil, a 5 p.m. broadcast start. And I'm going to ask our guest right now about that, because I've heard that the Brewers game was changed because of the Packers. Our guest on Thursday, every other Thursday, is JS Online sports reporter and sports guru for this very show, Mr. J.R. Radcliffe. Welcome to the show, sir. How are you today?
I am doing great. How are you guys?
I'm doing great. I'm not going to speak for Calvin. Calvin, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Football's here.
Yes. It is football season. The Badgers are underway. The Packers play tomorrow. And the NFL kicks off tonight. So it's very much in the bloodstream right now.
And there's no such thing as like growing up, it was, you know, football, Sunday night football or Sunday football or Monday night football. Now it's like football all the time, any day. It's no. And also the Brewers had to be like, all right, I guess we'll change the time of our game because the Packers, that's whatever with your football. That's fine. I'll watch. I'm rooting for the Packers. But tell us about the game tomorrow. We are playing in Brazil against the Philadelphia Eagles.
That is true. Yes. Much anticipated season opener here in South America. The first NFL regular season game to be played in South America, in Sao Paulo. So this is exciting. I think, you know, it's a great matchup, because the Eagles, I think, were a team that were among the best in football for most of last season. And then December hit and they collapsed, and really, really just, you know, like, could not get out of their own way. But I think the talent is still there. You know, they've added Saquon Barkley, a pretty exciting running back from one of their divisional rivals, the Giants. And I think that they have a couple really talented receivers. That's going to put a lot of stress on the Packers secondary. So there are definite things to watch here. Jalen Hurts is a He's a very good quarterback. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a great test. No matter what happens, I do know we will overreact to it.
What do you mean? Yes,
we will definitely take lessons from this and extrapolate them and panic or not panic. It'll be Super Bowl or will they make the playoffs by the end of this? But it's still an important game, though, because the Eagles could easily be battling with the Packers for a wild card spot by the end of the year. And tiebreakers are really meaningful in the NFL. They can really dictate what happens at the end of the season. There's only 17 games. So
yeah.
The odds of being tied with somebody are pretty solid, or at least go into the final week with the potential to be tied. So it ends up being kind of important in the grand scheme of things, but unfortunately it's just week one, crazy schedule, unusual kickoff time. It's going to be hard to really draw much from it, at least in the immediate aftermath.
If I'm not mistaken, you said Jalen Hurts is the quarterback for the Eagles, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is a 100-foot mural in Sao Paulo of Jordan Love and Jalen Hurts, if I'm not mistaken.
That's true. It's beautiful.
I just imagine all the people in Sao Paulo being like, that's nice. Who?
Who are they?
Yeah.
I would imagine that they have been preparing for this for some time. This is, again, this is a really big deal. So I think at this point they are, the football fans there certainly are familiar. And I imagine that that most people in the, you know, at least near the stadium are aware of what's going on, and this is going to be a big deal. So, it's a nice look. Jalen Hurts gets prominent, more prominent position. He's standing in front of the sun, it looks like, and Jordan Love on the same mural lower down. Hopefully that's not how the projected order of finish or how they ultimately finish. But it's quite lovely. Brazil's very excited for this. I mean, obviously this is all part of the NFL's global marketing strategy.
Yeah.
And South America, you know, I don't know how big the game of American football truly is in the Southern Hemisphere, but I know it's big enough that these tickets are extremely difficult to get. So I know that, and that's not just people traveling to the country. So I know there's going to be a lot of people who are really, really stoked to see NFL football on that soil.
I feel like even if the fandom isn't as big as it is here in America, of course, because, you know, it's America and that's kind of our sport, but there are going to be people who are going to go just for the spectacle of the event too. Like, you know, there are people who go to concerts just like, I just want to see them play or whatever. So I imagine there's going to be a lot of excitement. Tony on the live stream says, I've seen a lot of analysts with the Packers and Eagles at the top tier teams in the NFC, which is going to make for a tough first game. And Andrew from Maine, always with the funny guy, he says, who are they and why does Jalen hurt? So we got our Packers starting. And I'll say this, I am not the biggest football fan, but I'm here for you Packer fans. If they lose tomorrow, that's a knock on wood situation. It's okay. It's one game. Don't call for the head of the coach. Don't say it was a waste of money. Don't be like a Cubs fan whose Craig Council failed them for most of this season. Be positive. Now talk to us about the Badgers. They're starting out as well.
Yeah, they are. Their first game was last Friday. They also played a Friday night game, which was a little unusual, at Camp Randall Stadium against Western Michigan, team from the MAC, picked to finish in the middle of the MAC. The Badgers did not look great. They looked okay. They won the game. They won 28-14, but, you know, this is a very difficult schedule this year. Really, really difficult with the changes to the Big Ten, with Alabama coming in here on September 14th. And this team needs to be quite a bit better than they were last year, when I think they kind of failed to meet everybody's expectations. It was such a buzzy offseason, the addition of Luke Fickell, new coaching staff, new offensive approach, transfer quarterback, a lot of transfers. You know, it looked like they were going to really transform, and they didn't at all. They really just really struggled last year, and this year's schedule is this much tougher. They could be a markedly better team and have fewer wins easily this year. So this was not the talisman I think people were hoping for. They were trailing in the fourth quarter. They needed a pretty huge break on special teams, a punt that bounced off a Western Michigan player that they recovered that set up a go-ahead touchdown. They needed some things to go their way.
Yeah.
And they still were the better team, but that, of course, is understood going into the game. So I think this game on Saturday against South Dakota is going to be a big litmus test for someone like Tyler Van Dyke, another transfer quarterback who looked, I would say, okay in game one, but definitely not, you know, definitely not a change from what they've had in the past. So it's knowing Alabama's right around the corner, like they have to be clicking on all cylinders. And the first test was just, maybe it's just get it out of the way. And, you know, like there's a lot of transfers, a lot of new players. There's still some changes. Maybe that's what it was. But it wasn't like that last year when they struggled in the preseason, and then that just carried over. So we'll see what happens here.
If you're just listening in, you're just tuning in right now, we're talking to J.R. Ratcliffe, who is our sports guru. He is a writer for a Journal Sentinel Online. And Calvin, what are your thoughts on the football season coming up?
Yeah, I guess I was just wondering, with Alabama coming up, and I know football's football any given Sunday, do the Badgers have a realistic shot of beating Alabama?
Probably not. Probably not. But, like, we don't have the data yet to really know for sure. Now, the Badgers didn't play great. You know, Alabama might not be great against good teams either. We don't have much on either one of these teams yet. So it is possible that they have, you know, that Alabama isn't as good as they normally are. This isn't a team that's seen as like the best in the country or anything like that. And it's possible that the Badgers have something else that they're able to take a step forward and win that game. I mean, I would have said they probably don't have a chance to beat number 5 LSU a few years ago at Lambeau Field, but that's exactly what they did in week one. And it turns out LSU wasn't very good that year, and the Badgers were really solid. So, like, you look back, and it wasn't even that dramatic of an upset when you look back at the end of the season. But in the moment, that was huge. Huge win over a strong SEC school. It's a new coach at Alabama. They're going through transition, too. So it's possible that coming on the road to a Power 5 program, to a stadium that will be amped up, ready to go, first, like, I don't want to say real football game of the year, but that's the first major conference opponent on the schedule. I think that could be certainly working to Wisconsin's advantage. I would not expect them to win. Based on what I saw in week one, I'm not necessarily sloping toward optimism that they're going to win that game. But I do think, yeah, it's within the realm of possibility. That's true.
So I know it does seem typical that the Badgers typically play an SEC school in the early season, but do you think we're going to see more Big Ten SEC crossovers in the future? Do you think it will become more commonplace?
I would hope so. Football scheduling gets done years in advance, so it's really hard to get a vibe of, you certainly can't schedule an opponent being like, well, this would be a really good preseason test for us, and then 6 years later or whatever, you're bad, they're bad, it doesn't end up mattering at all, or it's so imbalanced that it ends up not mattering at all. It's really hard to kind of predict in football how it's going to go. But I don't, you know, I think that's a natural progression, because the Big Ten and the SEC are kind of, they've become super conferences, and we're getting to a point where it's kind of, those are the two biggest shows. I mean, there's other conferences there too, you know, ACC, but you could see a world where, like, they are so dominant on the college football landscape that they just program that in. Let's have a crossover every year. And it, you know, it certainly gets teams off on the right foot. If these teams think of themselves as national title contenders, they no longer have to worry about going undefeated. It only takes, you know, with 12 teams in the playoff, one loss, you can still be competing. Even two losses, if you have a heavy schedule, you could still be competing for a national title. So there's not as much risk of having that on your calendar. I think it would be great. I mean, it makes sense. You want to see the best teams play each other. It's how it works in basketball in the preseason. There's a bunch of easy ones, and then there's one or two really, really good matchups. It would be nice if that were football too.
I'm going to change gears on us really quick, because we've only got a few more minutes left, and I want to talk about a tweet.
You love your Brewers.
I love my Brewers, but I want to talk more about this tweet that you sent out yesterday, JR, that you entitled, let me use it.
Went viral.
Oh my gosh, it did. Look at you. Yeah. Calvin, we know JR Ratcliffe.
Had to turn off notifications on that one. Didn't expect that. Never do on the thing that really gets into the bloodstream.
But. Oh boy. Welcome to Humble Brag with J.R. Ratcliffe. It is a tweet titled, "I'm sorry, what now?" And it is a graphic that I'm looking at. This is highest percentage chance to win World Series according to Baseball Reference. The Brewers top it all with 12.7, and that's in front of the Astros, the Dodgers, the Phillies, and the Guardians. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, most of these analytic guys counted them out as far back as spring training, if not like even as when Craig Counsell left. And I know 12.7% is not a huge percentage right now, but that's still something in the fact that they're ahead of all these other, you know, huge teams, big market teams, middle market teams with more money. That's a big deal. It made J.R. Ratcliffe say, "I'm sorry, what now?" And he went viral.
So I need to add the necessary caveat. Their percentage increased even with the loss yesterday. It got even bigger over second place on the Baseball Reference.
100%. You heard that here, folks.
So I just want to say, I do think they can win the World Series. I think this team can win the World Series. That is not something I would have said at any point prior to, I don't know, August 1st.
Yeah.
But they are good enough. They are good enough. They have the pieces. And in a situation where weird stuff happens, they absolutely can. Now, the baseball reference odds are calculated completely differently than, say, the Fangraphs odds or the baseball prospectus odds, both of which have the Brewers in the 2 to 3% range. You know, I know for Fangraphs, they would be picked to finish. They have the 11th best odds. They're not even a top third team with best odds to win the World Series, according to their calculations. So everybody calculates this differently. It's obviously very limited in how much it can predict. We're talking about, oh, which team is going to win 3 out of 5 games in a random October series and then go on and surprise somebody? You know, like you cannot project that. There's no projecting that. But what the odds are saying is when you get a team that's been as good as the Brewers have been over the last 100 games, that's their metric, is looking at the last 100 games. There's some other stuff that they add in too, but they are the best team run differential in the league. That is usually heavily correlates with teams that do very well in the postseason. They're teams that are so dominant that they lead the league in run differential. There's just not that many good teams. So the Brewers being in that position, being at that top perch, it makes them an option here that they could pull this off. If only because there's nobody else who's stronger. Like everybody's kind of at the same level. So it is a nice thing. It's encouraging. Again, there are two other sites that don't think it's going to happen, but you never know.
Well, I don't care about them. I care about this other site that says we're going to win the World Series. For sure. You heard it here, folks. Viral Twitter guy, J.R. Ratcliffe, says we're winning. So, J.R., thank you so much for being on the show. We always love to talk to you on Thursdays, talking about sports. Find him on Twitter. His link is on the show notes. Stick around. We got one more thing coming up. Wine and Weather with Brittany Merlot. Stay close. Thanks a lot, JR. Take it easy. Have a great week. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matt and Air, who is currently on vacation, but will be returning on Monday, and we'll be very excited to see her. We're also very, very excited to see our last guest of the day, Civic Media meteorologist. I called her doctor, but that's now a true thing. She is now a doctor. Dr. DJ Flipmix herself, Brittany Merlot, with another edition of Weather and Wine, Wine and Weather, Weather and Wine. Brittany, how are you doing today? I'm befuddled. What's... I'm befuddled, but you're great.
What's up, Greg? I'm
good. I'm good. Wow, are you doing like your shock jock thing there?
I'm trying.
It's Greg and the DJ here on WAUK. All right.
What? DJ Flipmix.
That's right. How are you doing today, Brittany?
I'm ready to flip this mix around. I'm great. I'm fantastic. It's cloudy. How are you guys?
I'm doing well. Once again, I will never speak for Cal, but last time he said he was awesome. He's still awesome, Cal?
Yes, always awesome.
He's always awesome. As long as he has a book, a video game, and a comfy chair to sit in, he's always awesome. You wanted to talk to us about a few things here. We got a lot to cover here today. Let's talk about the weather coming up this weekend, first of all.
All right. So we've got a cold front right now that's moving through the state. That's why we're seeing those showers and storms moving into the Fox Valley right now. I'm not even sure if Milwaukee is going to get any. It kind of looks like it's going to fizzle out as it heads towards you. But behind it, strong northwest winds are going to be pulling in that crisp, cool fall feel, which I'm personally very excited for because we're just going to get a taste of it. We've got nice warm temperatures still moving back next week. In fact, near 90 in some places. So a little relief over the weekend with bright blue, beautiful skies. But highs only making it to the upper 50s tomorrow in northern parts of the state and low to mid 60s for the rest of us. And we'll hang on to that for Saturday, too. When you have that much cold up north, we're looking at some frost or potentially freeze advisories going out tomorrow night or Saturday night, which is a little early. So we'll see how that goes. But it depends how many clouds are out there overnight.
I'm sorry. Did you just say frost and freeze?
I said the F word.
Oh, hey, oh, get that dump button ready, Calvin.
At least it wasn't the S word.
Showers?
Soon enough.
Okay, all right. Oh,
no, no. And, it's S-N.
Okay, no, don't. No, please, no, no, please no, don't. No, I don't. I just don't want to deal with that. I'd rather get in trouble for you swearing than have to deal with snow. I said it.
You said it,
One of the things you did discuss, what you sent to me, you said the difference between meteorological fall, I can't even say the word, and astronomical fall. That sounds amazing. So please, what are the differences?
Well, for me, I'm already in the fall season. Meteorologists, scientists, we go by a meteorological fall, which is more for stats, record keeping. It's based on the calendar. So we flipped the book on September 1st, so yeah. Over Labor Day weekend. So it's September, October, and November is our fall. And most of the other people, most of the world, celebrates the astronomical fall. And people don't understand the difference. We're like, why are you calling it fall, Brittany? It's not. Well, the astronomical fall is basically based on how Earth rotates around the sun. So on that day, the autumn equinox, it's equal day and equal night.
Yeah.
So the length of day and night are the same. So that's why people use that day as the DJ Flip Mix day.
So what I'm hearing, Dr. Flip Mix, is that you all are just being weird for weird's sake. You can't just be like, hey, come along with the astronomical. You know, no, we need meteorological.
Well, it changes too much. We wobble and tilt and it varies and differences. And so if we were to go off climate stats off of that seasonal rotation, yeah, it would be all off whack and nuts and hard to keep track of. So that's why we're different.
Well, seeing as that you have a degree in that stuff, I'm just going to go ahead and believe you. And you just tell me what the weather's like and I'm fine. Frankly, I feel like most people are on board with what you do, because as soon as, you know, as soon as state fair happens, they're like, that's fall, we're done. Even though we have a solid month and a half of summer left, they're like, eh, bring out, hit the pumpkin spice, get me my sweater, it's fall, we're done.
That's true. So most people follow the meteorological, but they just don't know they could actually say it. You can say it out loud.
Dr. DJ Flip Mix is giving you permission. Now, before we get going, a couple minutes left, tell me more about pine cones for cash.
Okay, so I didn't know this was a thing. I just thought it was so cool that you can actually go out and pick up bushels of pine cones and the DNR and state nurseries will pay you for them. I mean, it's a decent amount too. And you basically just go collect red or white pine cones before the seeds fall out. That's key. And they'll pay you a bunch of money. So this is statewide. You can look into it and do it. I'm huge into that kind of stuff. I also like to cut my own Christmas trees too.
Of course you do. I mean,
you can get them out of state parks.
Yeah,
isn't that cool?
It's not illegal. It wouldn't be illegal. You'd be like, I cut down trees and I don't care what the law says.
You get a permit.
I don't know. I got a 4-foot tree that's made of plastic. It's great. It goes in a box, goes in my basement, and then it comes out around, I don't know, December 28th. We'll have to talk more about that when winter comes along, meteorological winter. When that comes along, we'll talk more about your tree cutting expeditions, because that's amazing, because you just lead an amazing life. And she is here every Thursday for Wine, Weather and Wine with, let's see here, civic media meteorologist, Dr. DJ Flip Mix, Brittany Merlot. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you being here. We really appreciate you spending time and getting us all the weather that we need to know about. For folks who don't know this, as of the 4th today, yesterday, actually, beginning Monday the 9th, I'm sorry, I'm reading this incorrectly. Beginning the 9th, tune in from 4 to 6 across the Civic Media Radio Network for the Dom Sylvia Show. The Dom Sylvia Show will air weekdays across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio News Talk stations, 4 to 6 evening drive time slot. Be here for it starting the 9th, Monday, Dominic Salvia with his very own show here on Civic Media. Brittany Merlot, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate you spending time with us. And we're going to have links to the show notes for the pine cone collection and get yourself paid for pine cones. Pine cone for pay. There it is. I love that. I want to thank everyone who is listening today, everyone who texted, everyone who called, everyone who put a comment in the live stream. We really appreciate that. Without you, we can't do this. Without you, we are nothing. Calvin and the engineers, they make this whole thing operate. And I also just want to send shout out to Jane Matinair for allowing me to do this for 2.5 weeks. It's been a very, very good time. We got news coming up right after the show, followed by the Todd Alba Show from noon to 2. Don't go anywhere, but stay hydrated, stay amazing, because you are amazing, and let no one tell you differently. You are listening to Matt and Aaron on Air, and we are on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close. Have a great day, folks.